living hell.
This is what real hope looks like. This is the word that those hopeless people need to hear. This is the word that 3,000 people that try to commit suicide today, the 3,000 that will try to commit tomorrow, 3,000 that will try to commit on Monday, this is the word that they need to hear, is that there is hope.
It's real superpower. It's hope. There's hope. It means hope.
Welcome to Victims and Villains. This is the channel where we talk nerd, we talk hope, and we speak nothing else. I am your host, Captain Nostalgia, and we are taking another trip in the tomb this week. Talk all things in Tomb Raider, so please help me in welcoming from the YouTube channel Croft Manor, Mr. Simon Butcher.
Hello. That is not right. You butchered my name, but so you tried. Hi there. Bucha.
Bucha. Sorry.
Yeah. No worries. It's German, so.
Yeah, I'm German, too.
Please help me in welcoming a composer behind the channel as well, Mr. Marlon White.
Yeah, that's close. I'm Marlon Witte, but, like, German names are a thing.
So sorry.
So that's okay. It's fine, like.
Hopefully I can be one for one on getting names right. And the narrator and the script editor behind the channel as well, Jenny Millward.
That's one. Hello.
As long as we're on first name basis, I guess it should work.
Yep.
I think that's what I try to do here is I usually just try and go with first names.
Yes.
Absolutely. Makes it much easier.
Yeah, so what we'll do is we'll go around and we'll make this kind of like a panel style episode. So we'll start. We'll just kind of rotate through everyone. I'm going to start with Simon, since we've been in the contact the most. Tell us a little bit about this project, the history and geography of In Tomb Raider.
Right. So that started out as a project that I've had in mind for, I want to say, 3 or 4 years by now, and I've always been like drawn to the history behind the Tomb Raider series, like all the places that Lara Croft visits and all the history involved in the games and the movies. And so I've decided I would like compile all of the archaeological data of the games and the geographical aspects, like the countries she visits and the culture she visits, into like sort of a documentary project, which is what this became. So that's kind of like a web series, a documentary series that I've created.
What is the... Now, you guys have, right now, you guys have the history and geography behind the first two games.
Yes.
What is the process like as far as researching, and what's the extent that you guys... the depth of what you guys cover in these videos?
I try to cover like most of a game's, basically the entire story of each game, really. So from start to finish, I look into, like I said, the countries and the cultures that appear in the games. And like I just walk the viewer through the game, basically, while exploring the historical background. So I try to really cover the entire length of each game, so nothing gets left out. So you can actually like experience the game as if it was a documentary, history documentary, basically.
And I mean, these are like no videos to really, as far as like bat an eye out, because the first one for the first game is 37 minutes, and
yes,
the next one for the sequel is 76 minutes. So
right.
What's the process like from start to finish as far as, you know, researching, right, editing, the just kind of putting together everything that you guys want to do?
Right. I usually start out by reading into like all of the history involved, like reading about the cultures, and that usually takes the longest time because you have to read through all. Like I start off by Wikipedia ing everything, and then I use references from Wikipedia to look up more detailed stuff, and then I start writing like drafts, all the stuff I found out, And once that is done, I sit down and actually write the script, the narration that I then send to Jenny, and then everything kind of rolls out from there. But the researching is the most time consuming part of it, definitely.
I would imagine so. And you know, for listeners that may not be familiar with the channel, what kind of cultures do you find yourself researching in the midst of these videos?
It really depends on the game, because all of the games have covered so many parts of human history. There's like ancient Egypt, and there's ancient Greece, and ancient Rome. There's South American cultures. It's basically everything that your typical archaeology adventure game really, everything that's involved in that. So basically every part of ancient history has been covered already. Most parts, a lot of the parts.
Nice. All right. Yeah. Marlon.
Yeah.
What is your role in the kind of all of this? Like, what is your creative process as far as putting the music to these videos?
Well, it like started out. Well, I was just like really excited about the project, because me and Simon were friends, and I was like, "Whoa, can I like somehow help you?" And then we kind of got the idea that I might make music, so I like really just started to learn how to make music with a program I had, and from there on, I basically taught myself and through like the internet how to compose and how to mix and everything, and I try to have like an ambient sound, like nothing too special, nothing like something that could fit in a documentary, you know.
Yeah, it works. It's just atmospheric background music, basically, yeah. Which like complements the stuff that's going on.
Yeah, I'm like not really a big musician or composer. I'm just like trying to be part of the project, and yeah,
it works.
It works perfectly.
Really does, yeah. So we're going to hear a little bit of that music that we're talking about here in just a little bit. But as far as, you know, the music for the video games has some of the most iconic sounds.
Yeah, totally.
In video game history of the past 20 years. So as a composer and as a creator, what is the challenge from both paying homage to that but making it your own at the same time?
It's definitely a challenge, because when I hear the original soundtrack, and I'm always like surprised or blown away by how it was composed and how it actually gets this nostalgic feeling, and this like it's so fitting to the actual topic and franchise. So I always like wonder, because I'm not like too big in like, I didn't study music or anything, so I like always wonder, how did Nathan McCree make this? And that's like, it's very impressive. And I think to like Tomb Raider fans, the soundtrack is a big part on the entire
Tomb Raider
experience.
Yeah. And so what is what was the, like, did you listen to a lot of the games, kind of the composing of the music, or like what was the process, right, as far as like, you know, trying to capture that sound and that feeling of these classic and iconic games?
I did listen to the soundtrack back and forth and everything, but I actually mainly just looked up and looked into the program and into making like which instruments to use, and also which instruments did Nathan McCree use. Like for the third game, there was I don't know, do you say harpsichord?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah,
harpsichord, yeah.
Okay. And the second game has a lot of violin, and the first game has a lot of harp, so I try to use the instruments and then like just play around with it and see what sounds calming enough, and yeah, that's.
I think
that's,
that balance works really well because you try to balance out your own music, and it always harmonizes with the actual tracks from the original games, which is amazing. Yeah. Because I use the tracks from the original games as well sometimes because like the fans connect with them. So it's always cool to have your original music play alongside the original music, which is really.
And the best thing is that when I first started out, I like almost knew nothing about the production making and everything.
Yeah.
And these days I learned a lot more, and I like use orchestral composition and everything. So through this project and over the years, I taught myself a lot about it. So yeah.
Yeah, you've definitely progressed too from the first episode to the second, and then the third, which is in the making. It's also a step forward in the music direction.
Yeah, I'm really proud of it, actually.
Yeah.
And I was going to actually ask that. It was going to be my next question. You guys already have the first two episodes out right now.
Mm-hmm.
We'll have links in the descriptions below. What is, like, how long does it take to do one of these videos as far as, like, we've already talked research, we've already talked music. But you guys are, when you guys are covering an entire game, I mean, that's a good chunk of time that you're already dedicating to playing the game and, you know, finding about the worlds that these games are set in. So what is the, like, how long does it actually take as a filmmaker to create these videos from start to finish?
I wish I had an answer to that question because I have absolutely no idea. It ranges. The first episode took me roughly 3 months, I think, at most. And then the second one took me almost a year. So it really ranges. To be fair, the second one is almost twice as long as the first one. But then again, it depends on how quickly I can get the research done and how quickly the music is composed, which is obviously a long process. And then writing the script and having the script recorded, and it all takes a lot of time depending on how long the whole thing is. So I'd say an episode takes from about 3 months to a year, really.
Yeah. I would assume so, because I mean these things are essentially like mini movies that you guys are compiling together. And
exactly.
Take time and
yes,
so, yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah.
So, Jenny, in all of this, you are the narrator and the script editor on this. How did you kind of get involved in doing these videos?
Oh Lord. Well, I've been a member of the Tomb Raider fan community for a hell of a long time. An active member, maybe since about 2005. And I've been doing voice work for the community on a completely voluntary basis since about 2006. And it's literally arranging everything from custom levels to animations to fan movies, trailers, and all sorts of things. This is definitely the longest project that I've committed to that I haven't sort of done myself. So this has been a really interesting spin on it, because this is like me narrating rather than trying to play a character, which has been really interesting stuff. And as Simon says, you know, the research has taken it to all sorts of different cultures and histories and locations, and it's really interesting to read that and try to, you know, keep the interest as the narration has been going. But I've been doing voice work like this for about 12, 13 years now. So it was really, really an honor for Simon to sort of email me and say, I'm doing this. You know, you saw the first episode, which was narrated by Shelley Blonde, the original voice of Lara Croft in 1996. I watched that episode and was, oh, wow, this is awesome. I love this. I hope he does the other episodes. But of course, Shelley Blonde is a professional voiceover actress who does it as a full-time job. You know, that was, you know, she's got too many commitments to be able to do this sort of thing, whereas I do it on a voluntary basis. And when Simon emailed me and said, would you, you know, I'm doing episode two and hopefully others in the future, would you like to narrate this? And I sort of hit the ceiling and went, oh, yes. Yes, please.
Well, I was honored you actually wanted to do it, because I've heard your voice for, as you say, like a decade at least, and I view you as one of the founding mothers of the Tomb Raider community.
Yeah, really. Definitely.
So, like, it was an honor when you got back to me and said you really wanted to narrate this, and I think you live up to Shelley's narration, and that's just wonderful that you're doing this now.
I'm seriously touched and blessed to be part of this community. It's opened up so many opportunities and a chance to work with incredibly creative people. It's wonderful.
That's so cool. And I want to ask this because we'll jump back into the channel here in a second. But you also actually, your channel features, and you run a website too called The Angel of Darkness. Links again in the description below. You have an audiobook that accompanies this title, so tell us a little bit about this book.
This is actually a separate project to the history and geography of Tomb Raider. Outside of voice work, I am also a writer and an accredited proofreader, editor. So my day job is, you know, correcting types for sort of punctuation, grammar, spelling, all of that business. And that's my other task on this project, is to take Simon's first draft of the episode and basically just edit it for clarity and to make sure that everything is, all the facts are in the right place, that it sounds natural to speak. Because very often, you know, having a huge paragraph looks great, but if you're narrating it, you think, oh God, I need a comma in the middle.
Yeah.
All that sort of little bits and bobs.
I really never have that in mind when I write, because I come from a academical background, so I usually just write like long essays, like historical essays, and it just gets convoluted sometimes. So I'm really glad Chenny looks over it and edits everything, because otherwise you wouldn't be able to listen to that and actually enjoy what's being said on screen, because you're like, I have no idea what's being talked about. So I'm glad she edits everything.
Yeah, but that. But let's say the Angel of Darkness is actually an audiobook production that I've recently finished of my novelization of the Angel of Darkness that I wrote in 2012. I've always loved audio books generally. You know, I grew up with them, and I've always adored the way that you can tell a story just through sound, and just through words and the inflection of a voice. So that raw novel was basically, I adapted it into an audio script to try and keep as much of the original material as possible. But for things like conversations and so on, I had to, you know, edit it for audio purposes. And that also featured another voice actor of the Tomb Raider community called Adam Coover. And he did all the male characters. Everybody from Curtis Trent to Von Croy to Eckhart, Carell, everybody, and did an extraordinary job. So
he's amazing. Yeah.
So that the sort of the voluntary voiceover side of things evolved for me into editing scripts and writing to audio production as well, which has been, as you found, Marlo, with learning the composing, it's been a hell of a learning curve. Yeah. You know, you pick up so many amazing skills when you're doing big projects like this, and you meet people that you would never meet under normal circumstances. So the chance to work in this community on projects like the History and Geography of Tomb Raider, even though they're huge and they require enormous time commitment, they're so brilliant. They give so much back, and they're a great channel for our passion.
Definitely.
It's so many levels. It's so fulfilling. I wouldn't miss it for the world.
Yeah. But it's funny you mentioned that you pick up so many skills, because you, the more you think about it, you really, you're like an all-rounder, really, because you have to edit, and you have to compose, and like for Marlon, he composes and he edits, and you pick up all these skills and you combine them into one big work of passion.
Passion. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely.
And it's so much fun to work with everybody.
Yeah. Well, this is the thing, you know, I've heard somebody else describe my audiobook as a passion project, and that's exactly what this is. Mm-hmm. You know, we can't and we don't make any money from it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have to dedicate enormous amounts of time. I mean, you mentioned, Josh, the how long does it take to do this? Well, you know, the editing of the script alone because of our other commitments in life, can take, you know, several weeks sometimes, fitting in a little bit here and a little bit there. So we do this because it gives us enormous fulfillment creatively, and the chance to collaborate with other people in different creative fields, you know, whether that's voice acting, writing, audio production, music, all of these different disciplines come together and create something unique and something really beautiful.
And it makes it so much more fun when you finish when you watch the finished
Absolutely.
Episode and know that we all did this in our free time with our passion, and then it's just one big work of community, of the community.
I've watched the second episode like, I don't know, 10 times or more. And each time you notice how much work is into it and how every person involved in it has put so much work and passion into it. So, yeah, definitely agree.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you guys are, you know, you speak my language right now because, you know, we do the podcast, but we also, you know, produce 2 to 3, you know, YouTube videos a week. And that is a lot of taxing
time.
Huge
commitment.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You know, especially, you know, sitting down with, you know, with creators, emailing creators, you know, doing conventions as well. Like, it's a huge amount of time. And we are going to take a very quick break, but we will be back on the other side talking more Tomb Raider goodness. And like we said earlier, this is Marlon's soundtrack. This song is called Garnet Twirl. We'll be right back. Thank you. you guys keep talking about this community, and I'm kind of curious about this because Lara Croft, if you guys don't know, is actually a – when I say you guys, I'm talking to the listeners is a British character. And so over here in the States, there's not really that big of a community, at least that I've found as far as Tomb Raider, because you guys are located in, you know, it sounds like, Jennifer, it sounds like you have a little bit of a British accent.
I am British born and bred. I live in the middle of Sherwood Forest. And not
a little bit of a British accent. Just a hint.
Yes, just a little hint.
But we also have Simon and Marlo from, you know, Germany. Is it more of a... Do you find that because of that, the character's back roots in the area of, you know, Europe and Britain, that it's more predominant over there?
That's a really good question, actually.
I think when you look at you kind of have to like separate the entire Tomb Raider franchise into two halves at this point, I think, because it's been rebooted. And I think like for the first half of the game, the original games, the first half of the franchise, the original games and the movies, I think it used to have appeal more to European audiences, maybe in its first stages. And then since, you know, the later games were developed by an American company, I think, like, a community based in America really started, showing around that time. Yeah.
Yeah. I would broadly agree with what Simon's just said because, you know, originally Tomb Raider was started by a tiny company in the middle of Derby, in the middle of England. You know, it was like, less than 12 people involved in it. So, you know, by today's standards, it would have been an indie game.
Mm-hmm.
And they were able to, you know, take enormous creative risks at the time and produce something nobody had ever really seen before, you know, a full 3D environment and all this sort of thing. And, you know, Lara Croft herself was a very groundbreaking character. But then, you know, Core Design, the original developers, lost the franchise in 2003. After the sixth game, The Angel of Darkness. But that was, you know, down to, you know, marketing problems and all sorts of developmental hell. We have not got the time to go into that.
We do not.
We don't. But by that point, you know, Tomb Raider had become a global sensation. And the franchise development rights were handed from Core Design to American-based Crystal Dynamics. They basically took the entire concept of Tomb Raider and the whole character of Lara Croft and rebuilt it from the ground up, possibly to appeal to a wider audience, because and also to tie in more closely with the two Hollywood films that had come out by that point. So there's an awful lot of the film's influence in the first Crystal Dynamics game, which was 2006's Legend. Things like the design of the manor, Lara Croft's relationship with her family. These are all derived more from the movie's iteration of the game and the character than the original Core Design era. And again, the series was rebooted yet again in 2013. Yeah. So we had suddenly Lara becoming this 21-year-old student marooned on an island in her very first origin story adventure. So there's been so many reboots and reinterpretations of the character that to call the Tomb Raider fan community one thing, like it's... Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like it's this great big, you know, single entity, is a bit of a misleading thing to do because every single time the franchise has been rebooted, a new set of fans have come in and totally different expectations and feelings towards it than the fan base that was there in the first place.
But I think if anything, the movies really... elevated the whole franchise and the name of Tomb Raider and the Lara Croft character to a level where an international audience really started consuming the media, the Tomb Raider media. So I think you could probably trace it back to the movies being the culprit of the bigger community, maybe, or like the at least the community overseas and the States and everything.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That seems very true. Like, you know, Lara was a groundbreaking character and everything in the video game world in the late 90s, but it took, you know, Hollywood and Angelina Jolie and all this massive marketing to make her internationally famous outside of the gaming genre. And now suddenly, you know, and then she could go back to the gaming industry and you know, reinvent herself, sort of thing.
It's been a back and forth between the films and the games, really. Even now with the new movie coming out and everything.
I'll say we're getting yet another movie.
Yes.
Really?
Yep.
But I want to, as you know, do you find yourself as a fan of the Tomb Raider mythology, do you find yourself connecting more with the earlier versions, or do you think it's refreshing that we've gotten these, you know, grounded root origins and roots for the character now? Because I'm probably in the minority when I say this as a Tomb Raider fan. I love the Image Comics era of the character. And I just felt like I love the video games, and I'm probably one of the only people in my circle of friends that appreciates these earlier games, you know, Tomb Raider, Tomb Raider 2, and Tomb Raider 3.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, everyone's talking about Rise of the Tomb Raider and, you know, the original Xbox reboot. But do you guys find yourselves personally, like, connecting to, like, one era or appreciating one era greater than the other?
I think you've just opened the box of Pandora, really.
Yeah.
That's
like
the one question you cannot ask a Tomb Raider fan in the year 2018.
Yeah, exactly. How long is this podcast again? Because it's been long enough.
Is it going to last another 5 hours?
Yeah,
because we're going to need that.
Yeah,
I mean, I've put out 3 hour long podcasts before, so if you
want we're good.
Or you guys can at least shit. It's up to you.
But for me personally, I obviously, growing up with the very first original iteration of Lara Croft, she's always been the one that I admired the most and the one I've connected with the most, just because she was the first Lara I've come in contact with back in the day. And she was the heroine that I grew up with, so she always like accompanied me on my way to adulthood, if you will. So obviously, I have the bigger connection is to that version of Lara, but that does not mean that I don't like the newer version of Lara. I'm a fan of the games. I like the games, and I can appreciate this take on Lara that we also see in the new movie now. It's definitely refreshing at the very least, in my eyes, but. When it comes down to it, I'm definitely a bigger fan of the original Lara than I am of the newer Lara, because I grew up with the older Lara. So this is kind of a new person to me that I have to get to know first, if you will.
Yeah, I actually grew up with the more recent Lara because I'm 17, closing to 18. And as a kid, I did play the originals, like the classic Tomb Raider 1, 2, 5 and 6 later, with my brother, but like I did grow up with Legend coming out, Anniversary coming out, Underworld coming out, and that, like, character wise that Lara was more like my childhood. Mm-hmm. But like mythologically I would say all eras are kind of as like they have the same death, because the new reboot, like, I was super interested in that Yamatai, Himiko, all this, like, Japanese mythology. It was so interesting to me, and I actually looked at a bunch of stuff about that up, and I found out that there's, like, how much background is in there. And in the first reboot, the Nordic, Norse mythology, in Underworld was super interesting, and of course in the classic games, all kinds of mythologies. Like, I think Tomb Raider always served and still does serve a lot of great mythologically and archaeologic and historic room.
Yeah, that's definitely. That's also what I try to like combine in history and geography and Tomb Raider, really, because that's the one aspect of the franchise that connects most of the people, because they all to some degree develop like a passion for history or and archaeology and like the lore of the game, the mythology of the game, and that's like the combining aspect of the franchise. And even if you don't agree with a certain version of Lara, you at least you can always find adventure in the games and history in the games that everyone can have fun with. Mm-hmm. So that's one aspect that goes that has been like the how do you say the red line throughout the entire franchise that connects all of the titles.
Yeah, very much so. I mean, I am a pretty much a diehard core design era fan. And it's weird because I didn't actually get into Tomb Raider until like the fourth game, because from like 1996 to 8, you know, so Tomb Raider 1, 2 and 3, all I really saw of the game was just the marketing. And I that turned me off completely. I was thinking, you know, this is just
really?
Yeah, it did. I just thought, oh god, this is just the brainless big boobed bimbo bouncing around the screen.
Yeah,
I thought, oh yeah, that was like, oh god, you've got to be kidding, you know, this
right.
is ridiculous. And then as a joke, we bought my mom Tomb Raider 4.
Wow.
Because she saw a TV advert for it and said, oh, that looks like fun. So I thought, all right, I'll just, you know, rub it in a little bit. She never got to play it. I loaded it up, and within like 15 minutes, I was hooked, because suddenly I realized, hang on a minute, this big boob bimbo has brains and wits, and the environments are gorgeous. And oh my God, I can go around and explore stuff, and oh, this is awesome. So my actual experience of playing the game started with Tomb Raider 4, with The Last Revelation, and that whole story arc of Lara, you know, her origin story as an adventurer in Cambodia, and then all that gorgeousness in Egypt. I mean, I've been obsessed with ancient Egypt since I was a child. So to have a whole video game where I could bounce around pyramids and explore deserts and go on trains through rocky mountains and see all these gods and monsters and stuff, this was paradise for me. And I played the first three games. I got Chronicles when it came out. I was first in the queue for Angel of Darkness. I can still remember, you know, the smell of the smell as I opened the case with the CD in it.
The smell of the Angel of Darkness. What's that smell like?
It smelled like intrigue and gothic horror.
And lots of blood.
It also, with hindsight, smelled of blood, sweat and tears that was absolutely brutalized by, you know, developmental hell. But that was my joy in Tomb Raider. It was this feeling of, hang on a minute, this Lara Croft lass isn't just an empty-headed marketing pinup. She's
I actually never heard that.
Yeah,
I actually never heard of someone like not like growing up or loving Tomb Raider like right off the bat, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think it's surprising that like a diehard Tomb Raider fan like you was like at first not really into the idea of Lara Croft. And I think that's something new.
Well, this is the thing. It highlights the disparity between the marketing campaign in the late 90s, mm-hmm. which, absolutely. Let's be honest, at the time, you know, this was the era of Spice Girls and girl power, but it was also the era of the Lad Mag and, you know, really over-sexualizing feminine characters. I mean, the idea of a female protagonist was extraordinary at the time. You know, there were others. We had, like, Seamus Aran and stuff like that, but mm-hmm. never before had she been so feminine. I mean, exaggeratedly so.
Yeah.
But that put me off, because the marketing only focused on the outward appearance of it. You had to play the game to listen to her dialogue, to see her in action, to realize that this character has got huge, mm-hmm. huge depth. You know, she's sassy and sociopathic, but she's also deeply flawed. She's not a nice person. She saves the world by accident.
Yeah.
I mean, that was the thing with The Last Revelation that really shocked me, was that, oh, crap, I should not have removed that amulet, even though it was nice and shiny. And now I'm going to spend the rest of the game, all, you know, long, long puzzle, headaching hours of it, solving my mistake.
And all that was lost in the marketing. You couldn't absolutely see any of this on the box art or on the posters and on the merchandise, which is one of the things I truly appreciate about the new marketing campaigns of the rebooted games and the movie coming out, because
they make her look badass.
Yeah, you actually you can imagine what's going on in the games and in the movie by looking at the promotional artwork and all the merchandise they put out, because you don't have to actually look into it that hard anymore. You see this woman and you know what she's going through and what's happening in the games. At least you can imagine. And when you look at the old posters, like, all you see is Lara in pinup poses, and it's awkward, because it's like you're gonna play a porn game, but you're really not, and there's no way of knowing it back in the day. And that's just really sad about the marketing.
Absolutely agree there.
Yeah, and you know, it wasn't too long before, you know, some teenage boys got their hands on her, though, because he's also gave us the code-breaking nude raider.
Right.
Trust me, this sort of stuff keeps going on to this day. Anybody who says, oh, reboot Lara, we have completely, you know, surgically removed all of her sex appeal, and we've made her this, you know, relatively flat-chested person who doesn't care about relationships and doesn't matter. Yeah, these people need to steer clear of certain areas of the internet, because trust me, fans are still fetishizing her and fantasizing about her to the point where you think, oh, come on, get a life.
It's always going to happen, like, no matter how much you desexualize the character.
Yeah,
it's always going to be there.
This is the thing, though, that I find the height of irony, that in the first incarnation, the marketing just was nothing but sexualization of the character. Mm-hmm. And now marketing is anything but sexualizing the character. Mm-hmm. She's been almost neutered, tamed to the point where, you know, she's not, you know, there's a chase. I think in Tomb Raider, the reboot, there's like one of the characters, Alex, is pinned down in the ship and he's doing the whole heroic sacrifice thing. And we find out through the journal entries and stuff that we find around the game that he's had this unrequited love for Lara for a long time, which I thought was really sweet. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you know, she sort of gives him a chase kiss on the cheek and then legs it. Mm-hmm. So she wasn't, she went from being a bit of a tease in the promotional stuff in the 90s to being this very, very cold, very aloof person. Yeah. Not in the, I am sexy and I know it, but I'm not going to let you near me, to what's sex again?
Yeah.
You know, not even having, you know, any of that acknowledged, but in the slightest.
It doesn't, like, that entire sexualization thing doesn't even really fit with the reboot. Like, in Legend Anniversary Underworld, it was kind of still, like, she in Legend, she had a bit of, like, a revealing outfit still and stuff. Maybe it's because of her lifestyle, whatever. But now, she is on this island, like, in 2013, she was on this island and going through all this stuff, and it had no real room for it. And in Rise, it's, like, the aftermath and her character after this adventure. So it's like not really, it doesn't even fit anymore into that.
Yes.
I mean, the funniest thing that the height of irony for this was that Toby Gard, the original visual designer for Lara, left Core Design just before Tomb Raider, you know, was published and everything, because he didn't like the oval sexualization of the character in the marketing. Fair enough, totally agree with that. But then he was brought back onto the creative team for Legend in Crystal Dynamics reboot era in 2006, and suddenly you get unlockable outfits in game of her playing around in a bikini.
Yeah.
And of course the famous amazing gravity defying Tokyo dress, which
incredible,
frankly, not all the brass strap material in the universe should allow that to happen.
Yeah.
So this is the really weird thing. In the original incarnation, only the marketing really sexualized her, because in the game, no, it didn't happen. And yet later, the marketing was toned down, but in game, it was sort of emphasized, quite literally, in your face. And I thought, a bit of a strange twist around there, you know, that really doesn't make any sense. And as you say, in the reboot, it doesn't have any place at all. So it's sort of gone through, you know, there's so many the metronome of sexualization of mm-hmm. Lara has swung so many times, I'm making me dizzy.
Definitely. There's just such an awkward relationship with the developers and Lara's sexualization, because at this point they're like trying so hard not to show any form of her sexuality, and it's kind of hypocritical at some point, because at some point it's part of her character. There's one layer of her character that just revolves around her femininity. It's just part of who she is, and I think to try and avoid that at all costs, just because you've created this new version of her, it doesn't really work that well. I mean, I understand that they're trying very hard to desexualize Lara, but not always in the right ways, I think.
I think we've yet to see a happy medium where she can be a believable, rounded character, and yet not be caricatured in any sexuality.
I think it either feels like forced on her or mm-hmm. or like forced away from her. And I actually mm-hmm. remember when I was a very small child, I asked my mom, do you think Lara would wear makeup and nails and like dresses and everything? And my mom said, yeah, probably, she's a woman. And that made me realize, well, Lara, like, she wears adventure outfits, but maybe in Legend, which I played at the time, maybe she likes dressing up as that person because she is a woman and she likes these outfits, whatever, and wants to do that. And that's what I like then realized. But otherwise, I don't really like see another reason.
Yeah. Oh, you just made me think, Marlo, to swap it round, to sort of play devil's advocate, you know, we have Indiana Jones, who is equally at home being portrayed in a torn shirt and fatigues and a hat with a whip, and in a tuxedo Chinese restaurants and everything like that, you know, bargaining with gangsters and stuff. So you know, Lara is capable of doing both as well. You know, just exactly. from the opposite end of the spectrum.
Yes.
And I think that it also alludes to the culture that, you know, you have at that time, because the mid to late 90s, like Jenny had said, was very hype, over-sexualized. You know, from someone who's stepping back as a comic nerd, you look at the way that Image was portraying some of their female protagonists, look at the way that DC was doing it, Marvel was doing it, but now we're in an era where it's strong females don't need to be busty, and they don't need to be well-rounded or over-sexualized. We've proven that you can have great characters without looking like they belong in pornos.
Absolutely.
I mean, I think that's one reason, again, why I keep coming back to The Angel of Darkness, because in that, there wasn't a single outfit that showed the least bit of cleavage, that she was down to business. She was, you know, dressed in army fatigues and boots,
and,
you know, being really, really down to earth and practical. You know,
the denim outfit.
Yeah, I was just thinking, am I going to be, you know, running around? I mean, it was tickled me to death when she goes to the Strahov and she starts off in snow and stuff, and she's got the long trousers, and then suddenly, just like that, she enters this hot, steamy biodome, and she's rolled her trousers up to shorts. Yeah. And I'm thinking, that's a practical woman.
That's amazing, yeah. That's probably the least sexualized she's ever been in Angel of Darkness, because there's no hints of it anywhere, and not even in the promotional art, because that's an entirely different direction they took. Yeah. So, except maybe for the jiggle physics of her breasts that they introduced, that was absolutely necessary.
I wince every single time I do that. I in sympathy here, it's really not comfortable at all.
Yeah. It's really awkward to look at.
All right, so as far as you guys go, when it comes to projects in the Tomb Raider mythology and the Tomb Raider community, what other projects are you guys working on right now?
Oh boy. Shall I go first on that one?
Please.
Well, at the moment I'm currently knee-deep in writing my own Angel of Darkness sequel. It started as a group collaborative project about 5 years ago, but members have come and gone and come and gone, and I seem to be the only one left. It was originally going to be a playable game made with the level editor engine, but it just grew too big, too fast, too little organization and not enough time. You know, it would have been a bit of a challenge for a triple gay gaming industry, frankly. But it was also always going to be novelized as well. So, you know, I'm chugging away at that. I'm determined to get that finished because it's just one of those things where it's too good to leave in a shelf. It deserves to be seen. It deserves to be written. And, you know, I'm very, very passionate about that. But I'm also just determined to get on with it. You know, I don't want to publicize it. I don't want to talk about it, you know, in any great detail. I want to actually finish the damn thing and have it in my hand before I start, you know, waxing lyrical about it. I'm also working with the Dark Angel Project, which people have probably come across on social media. That's as much as I can talk about. I'm really sorry.
Exactly.
I desperately, desperately want to talk about it, and you guys are in for a treat, but that is all I can say.
Nobody has to know. You can talk about it here. Just don't tell Ash or anyone.
I think I've seen that.
I have the sword of, you know, I feel like I am Lara walking through that, the Damascus, is it the Damascus room or Damocles? Damocles room, you know, the sword poised to fall on if I say any other words on that. So, I continue to do odd bits and pieces of voice work for other fan projects. I did one just the other day. Sometimes it's a line here or like Simon's, you know, it can run into like 23 or 4 pages.
Sometimes it's a line, sometimes it's 50 pages of historical work.
So, you know, it keeps me busy. It keeps me out of trouble most of the time.
All right. What about you guys, Marlo and Simon? What else you guys got cooking for us?
I'm not really working on anything else except for another series on my channel, which is called Tomb Raider Polls, which is a series where I ask the fan community a Tomb Raider related question in the form of a poll, and then everyone in the community votes on it, and when the results come in, I usually make a video about the results and like talk about them and put them in top 10 ranking lists, like the whole Mojo the channel on YouTube, Watch Mojo, I think. And yes. So that's a thing I'm working on, and it's usually just questions like, what is your favorite outfit that Lara wore? What is your favorite game out of the one era or the other? And just questions that everyone in the community can answer, or favorite levels even from the games.
Yeah, they're really sassy. They're really funny. Like,
yeah, I try to make them. They're definitely on the comedic side, like compared to the documentary series I'm doing, which is very
sophisticated.
Well,
very straight faced.
You said that, yeah. And then the polls videos are just like comedy, and they're not long. They're maybe 10 minutes a video. So I can do them a lot quicker than the documentary project.
Yeah, you just reminded me, Simon, because I'm also doing a lot of work for Survivor Reborn, which is another Tomb Raider fan site. There's quite a few of us, and we, you know, I write articles, I edit articles. We're moving into, you know, new media in the next few months, and that, just frankly, sometimes keeping on top of that is a bit of a full time job. But this is the thing about the fan community; it's got so much going on, you know, that even in the quiet moments, you can, you know, just go to a fan site, and there's just so many people doing so many things.
Absolutely.
You know, it's almost a full-time job to just keep up with it all.
Yeah. And it's fascinating because even the oldest games, like the very first game, which came out 22 years ago at this point, it still has such a there's still so many fans that do things with that game, like the very first game. And like my documentary, for instance, it features the first video game in the Tomb Raider franchise, and that's 20 years ago, and there's still fans that are passionate about these old games, not just the rebooted ones. And that's, I think, very special, because you have there's not a lot of fandoms or communities where people yeah. still care so passionately about something that's so old and so yeah. that happened so long ago.
There's not really a lot of franchises either that like don't die out after like a decade or something,
yes.
right?
It, like, take Final Fantasy for instance. There's not a single person that cares about Final Fantasy One.
Yeah, that's what
that
I was thinking
care about
of right
care
now.
About Tomb Raider One, and yeah.
Well, a perfect example of that is the level editor community. I mean,
in
2001, Core Design released Tomb Raider Chronicles, but they also released the actual engine that they were using to build the levels, the grid-based engine. And fans started to build their own levels, but they did more than that. They modded the actual engine. They added all sorts of patches to it to improve its flexibility and add new features. You know, there are a huge number of fan-made levels that really do rival, if not surpass, the original source material games in the quality, the length, the inventiveness. You know, there are some incredibly talented people out there. And as you say, we're talking well over a decade, you know, approaching 20 years old now.
Yes.
And yet people are still doing incredibly creative things with these old tools. It's just phenomenal. I mean, even down to, you know, they're building whole new tributes to the really first like games mm-hmm. out of new engines, because there's things like Nikobas, who recently mm-hmm. released the
oh,
demo
yeah.
for his Tomb Raider 2 remake that's made with the Unreal Engine. I did some work for him as well, you know, in voice acting and script editing. But dear God, you know, to think that this game, the original game, came out over 20 years ago
yeah.
and somebody has taken all this trouble.
Yeah. And it's not just like only the community. It's also like it came out on mobile, and
yeah.
That's also like crazy, because like you have this old game and people want to play it on their phones and
mm-hmm.
like think about that. It's
yeah.
kind of weird.
Exactly. And there's a rumor going around that they're being remastered on Steam.
Yeah, that's true.
And everyone's going crazy just at the rumor of that.
Yeah.
There's a news article that may or may not be true.
Yeah.
And everyone lost their mind when they saw that the games are being rebooted. Remastered for
yeah.
Steam. And that just shows the passion that's still there in this community.
I mean, that's something you said earlier, Josh, about, you know, that you feel sometimes that you're the only person in your, you know, circle who still gives a damn about the original game.
Yeah.
I'm telling you flat out that there is still a huge and super passionate
yeah.
fan base for yeah. like the first incarnation of the games. And, you know, we may not have the limelight anymore because, you know, it's gone to an American company and it's gone to Hollywood and it's going off and doing all these amazing things in new ways.
It's growing up. It doesn't need us anymore.
Yeah, it's still here.
Yeah, even I feel sometimes feel like the odd one out within the community, because I enjoy the reboot sometimes a bit more. So, like, that like says a lot about how the classic games stand in the Tomb Raider fandom. And,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
And, I mean, I would say even, you know, I need to get around the right people to talk about. It was hard, because when we set out to do, you know, the month of March, we really wanted to have as much Tomb Raider mythology as we could, covering
mm-hmm.
everything from the games, the original movies, the new movies. And it was hard for me to find people that I could bring on to talk about it, because people just didn't share that same level of passion that I do for these properties.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I started looking into like, you know, specific websites or YouTube channels that were based around the idea of, you know, taking that fandom and going that extra mile with it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, we're completely batshit crazy about it. and there is no hope of a cure either.
No,
certainly not
really
what I can
isn't.
Say anyway.
But it's very cool that you actually reached out to Tomb Raider fans and the Tomb Raider community to actually do the franchise justice by not just you know, talking about it to people that don't really care for it that much. So it's very cool that you got fans to talk about it.
Absolutely, really, really.
It's not like a forgotten gem or anything.
All right, well, if you guys are listening to this right now and you or someone you know is struggling with suicide, addiction, self-harm, depression, or addiction, please reach out. Suicide is currently the 10th leading cause of death in the United States, there are 123 suicides that occur right here in our own backyard each and every day. And for every successful one of those suicides, 25 more being attempted. That's 3,075 suicides. So if you or someone you know is struggling, please reach out. And when you talk internationally, there are over 800,000 that occur all over the world. That's one death roughly every 40 seconds. So you guys can reach out to us on any of our social media. Links are in the descriptions below. Call the Suicide Lifeline at 1-800-273-8255 or also text anonymously to 741-741. But where can people find you guys online, and where can people follow all of the Tomb Raider justice you guys are doing?
Kenny, you want to go first? because you deserve it.
Oh, God. Yeah. Well, I have my own personal website, which is jrmillward.com. But I also work for Survivor Reborn. So if you go into either Facebook or Twitter, or indeed Google, and find Survivor Reborn, you'll find us. You can also find my YouTube channel, Jennifer R. Millward. But if you want to find me slightly more easily, then it's probably best if you just Google Tomb Raider Angel of Darkness audiobook, and you'll probably find me that way.
And listen to the entire damn thing, because it's absolutely amazing.
Yeah, Simon is kind of one of my huge fans.
And, yeah.
I'm so grateful for
his support. I have several shirts with Tomb Raider audiobook number one fan written out on it. I made them myself, and I wear them every day of my life.
I feel so blessed.
But
yeah, that's probably my Tomb Raider community links going on. But by all means, please check out Survivor Reborn as well, because it's not just me. There are some awesome bloggers on there who regularly churn out really interesting articles, and we're going to be moving into podcasts hopefully in the next couple of months. So, you know, we'll be having these light informal discussions and getting interviews on and all sorts of really cool stuff. Really looking forward to doing that. Again, with, you know, audio production skills that I learned and through doing things like this History and Geography of Tomb Raider. That's a great experience.
Thank you. well, you can find History and Geography in Tomb Raider by Googling it, probably, and it'll be the first thing that shows up. It's a bit complicated because I made my YouTube channel 11 years ago, I believe. It's been that long. And back in the day, you had to use, you had to come up with a username, which used to be, my username used to be Lara Croft Fan 123, because I was about 12 years old at the time. And I was very creative. But so I had to stick with that username for a good 10 years. And then last year or 2 years ago, I changed it to Croft Manor. And I'm not entirely sure if that is the actual username off the channel and the URL of the channel, because I'm not sure how YouTube works exactly. I have no idea how YouTube works. But if you
can find your channel when you type in Croft Manor without a space.
You probably can, yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
Just the word Croft Manor. It should come up, yeah. Or you just Google or look up History and Geography in Tomb Raider on YouTube, and you'll find it. Mm-hmm. And there's also a Facebook page for it where I post updates on when the next episodes come out, which is also sort of a Facebook page at this point for my entire channel, because I post news about everything that's going on the channel, and even sometimes just community-related things, Tomb Raider community, which is called TR History, which is one word, and you'll find that there. And there's also links to my personal Twitter and everything if you want to check that out. And yeah, that's about all the places you can find the documentary on.
So we'll supply links aplenty where needed.
Definitely. And you can also find links to Marlon's SoundCloud. In there.
All I have is like a SoundCloud. I'm like just, I'm not really like big in the community part, but I have all my tracks and playlists also of the History and Geography soundtrack on SoundCloud, and
yeah, that's very cool, because you made the playlist for each episode like respectively, so you can just listen to all the ambient music and everything from the actual episodes in one playlist. And it's really, it's good music to actually listen to outside of the documentary, because it's really, it's almost like relaxing, and it's very, very good music to listen to outside documentary. Mm-hmm.
Thanks.
All right. Well, you guys heard it once before, and we're leaving you guys this week with some of that sweet music that they were talking about. This song is called Platonic. But until next time, remember, keep talking nerd, talking hope, and speaking nothing else. We'll see you guys next time.